Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 142. So news this week, as I mentioned before, I went to the Masonic Symposium in Westchester, Illinois at Pleiades Lodge. It was a wonderful time, and I have to thank the brothers there for letting me record portions and just for coming all that way in order to make it so special. So a huge thanks to Brother Robert Hurd, and I want to also wish him safe travels and a safe journey as he goes over to Africa to do some presentations for a few lodges over there. I also want to thank Brother Harper for a fantastic presentation, as well as Brother Anthony Mongelli. Holy cow. Just some really great stuff, guys. If you made it, you know how awesome it was. If you didn't, maybe next time. It could not have been better. Except it was. I had Brother Aaron Gardner, Brother Shimeon, and also Rob the Kid Walk, who came all the way from Maryland to see this one. And for me, it was a special thing to have us all there. Rob, if you're listening, I'm hoping that that nickname sticks, the Kid. Also, I have to thank Brother Walk's biological brother for coming along and driving all that way. You, sir, are a brother at heart. So again, I am recording this one in advance of an event that I'm attending, which is the Cornerstone Laying for a ceremony that's taking place at the Illinois Advocate Masonic Medical Center in Chicago. This is a joint ceremony put on by both the Grand Lodge of the State of Illinois as well as the Most Worshipful Prince Hall Grand Lodge of Illinois. And I'm really looking forward to it and to see what all this brotherhood can accomplish. I know it's going to be amazing. And after that, my junior warden and my worshipful master and myself are attending the Masters and Wardens Dinner at the Medina Shrine in Chicago. I know that's going to be a fantastic evening as well, and I can't wait. I wanted to mention the Midnight Freemasons website briefly, which is always having some tremendous content coming up, so I hope you are all ready for it. I want to also mention that the live show, the Masonic Roundtable, which again is live on YouTube, as well as Google Plus on the Google Hangouts, Tuesdays at 10, 9 Central. And they had a big announcement this week, this last Tuesday. In fact, many of you said that you loved the show, but streaming HD video was difficult, or perhaps you guys just preferred an audio podcast version of the show. So we did it. With the amazing help of all the brothers, we did it. John secured the domain. Nick is publicity and our man on Reddit, which he refers to as the front page of the internet. Jason is our social media guy, and Juan is our art guy, and I am handling the audio. But I have to say that Juan plays an integral part of the audio as well. Without Juan, I wouldn't be bringing you this show today in the quality that it's being brought to you without his help. And the same goes for the Masonic Roundtable, so a huge thanks to Brother Juan also. The show is now available on iTunes and will soon be available other places under the Masonic Roundtable. And there are only a few episodes up right now, but we will be playing catch-up over the next few weeks, so stay tuned. Hopefully by the time you read this, we will have 5 to 8 episodes up. The first paper I have for you is a Knights Templar paper on the Demolay. It comes from Knight Templar, May 2014, number 5. The article is entitled, The Demolay Degree. Fact or Fiction, by Sir Knight Seth C. Anthony. I think few would argue that the Demolay degree can be one of the most impressive experiences in all of Freemasonry, let alone in the Demolay. Yet, one line of that degree always tugged at me a little. While I don't have a ritual book in front of me to quote it, the orator, at the beginning of the ceremony, states that the events portrayed in the degree are essentially a condensed version of several trials, used to depict the point of the degree. So the ritual itself acknowledges that the events portrayed are not historically accurate. This led me to wonder, what did exactly happen? Thanks to the wonders of the internet, this research isn't hard to find. It took me a little while to dig through it all and get to the real meat of the story, so I decided to condense the narrative to the most important points and share it with you here. The day was Friday the 13th, 1307. This day literally lives on to the present as an ill omen. Yes, you can thank Jacques de Molay for Friday the 13th, being bad luck, but I digress. Just a day before, Jacques was in Paris, attending a royal funeral for the sister-in-law of the King of France. In the morning, King Philip of France dispatched the military to round up any Templars in Paris and arrest them on charges of heresy and blasphemy, fancy words that mean doing things against the church. Why would Philip do such a thing? It seems that the monarchy of France was a little short on cash, repeatedly. When they found their coffers dry, they would head over to the local Templar preceptory and borrow some cash. And borrow they did. Philip was in deep debt to the Templars, who he knew were very wealthy. He figured that if he could seize all of the Templar assets and dissolve their organization, he would be out of debt and very wealthy in one fell swoop. So the arrests were made, and Jacques was imprisoned. The Templars were taken to the University of Paris, and about 10 days later were viciously interrogated in an attempt to get a confession. During this interrogation, Jacques confessed to the king's torturers that the Templars did indeed commit acts of heresy, such as trampling on the cross and denying Christ. Having gotten this confession, the interrogators then forced Jacques to write a letter to all of the Templars that implored them to confess and give themselves up. It seemed the game was over. There is still one character left in the story, however, and that would be Pope Clement V. You see, Philip couldn't have all the Templars arrested without his express permission, without Clement's approval. Philip would have been out of luck. However, Philip was a devious man who had caused a lot of trouble with the papacy in the past. His latest fight, before the Templar issue, had forced the Pope to move his headquarters from Rome to southern France, right under the thumb of Philip. The Pope didn't have much choice in the Templar matter, thanks to all of this, and quickly gave his blessing. Clement wasn't a complete pawn, though, and even after Jacques had confessed to the king's tortures, he still wanted to hear Jacques' story for himself. In December 1307, Clement dispatched two high-ranking cardinals to talk to Jacques face-to-face. When the cardinals confronted him about the charges and the confession, he quickly recanted, taking the position that he had no choice but to confess after being tortured, and that he knew the king's men wouldn't take no for an answer. However, he believed that the cardinals, being men of the cloth, would give him a fairer trial. So he recanted to them, believing that the church would trust his word and save him. Upon hearing this, Philip and Clement began to argue about who should be in charge of trying and convicting the Templars. This squabble lasted until the summer of 1308, when it was decided that the king could preside over a trial of the order, which of course would involve its disbanding, with its monies being turned over to the King of France. However, Clement and the church would retain control of the trials of the Templar themselves, and so in 1309 the church began hearings for Jacques and other Templars. He again recanted his confessions to the Pope and his cardinals. The Pope then believed that the case was pretty clear, and called an ecumenical council, a meeting of several church officials, to make a decision on an important matter in the spring of 1310 to be held at Castle Chinon in Vienne, France. At this conference, cardinals again questioned Jacques about the order and his confessions in 1307. The problem was that the king didn't trust the Pope and his officials to get the confessions out of Jacques a second time, so he sent royal officials to the trial. Upon seeing these officials, Jacques again confessed to the crimes. The case was now right back where it was in 1307. To make matters worse, Philip used confessions gained in 1307 to burn 54 Templars at the stake. With all of the evidence being so convoluted, and several Templars having been tried, convicted, and executed, the council was not able to come to a decision until 1312. The council then decided to abolish the Templar order as part of the church, and to continue imprisoning de Molay and several other high-level Templar officials. So, for 2 more years, Jacques and his companions lay rotting in a French prison. Under pressure from Philip, and wanting to finally put the issue to rest, Clement dispatched several cardinals to meet with de Molay in 1314 and decide his final fate. The cardinals met with de Molay and three of his highest officials, Hugh de Perraud, Geoffrey de Charnay, and Geoffrey de Ganneville. After hearing testimony, the cardinals decided to imprison the four men for the rest of their lives and to spare them execution. Upon hearing this, Jacques, who was now close to 70 years old, gave a stirring speech that again proclaimed his innocence. Joining Jacques in this speech was Geoffrey de Charnay, who loudly protested the verdict. After hearing his public disruption to the trial, Philip ordered both men to be burned at the stake as relapsed heretics. So it was to be that very night that Jacques de Molay and Geoffrey de Charnay were burned at the stake. There are several legends surrounding Jacques' death. Some say that he asked that his hands not be tied so that he could die praying. Another tale says that Jacques cursed both the king and the pope, and that within a year of his death, he would meet them at the right hand of God to be judged. Interestingly enough, the pope died a few months later due to an illness, with the king soon following him to the grave, thanks to a haunting accident. Thus it came to pass that the Templars were abolished, and Jacques de Molay would be their last Grand Master. Today, we as de Molays recreate this scene in the de Molay degree. Now that you know the whole story, it's easy to see where embellishments have been made and liberties taken to provide a better story. The basic principle, however, remains the same. Jacques died proclaiming his innocence along with his brother Templars. This, my brothers, remains a truly commendable act. That's not the whole story, though. Documents were discovered in the Vatican in 2002 that show that Pope Clement absolved de Molay of wrongdoing in 1309 while on trial at Chinon. Even this papal decree of innocence was not enough to purchase Jacques his freedom and life. After reading this, I hope that each time you watch the de Molay decree, you think about this story. You remember that Jacques spent the last 7 years of his life defending his name under brutal conditions, only to be declared innocent and then guilty again, ending in his demise. Hail, the noble martyr. Sir Knight Seth Anthony is a division commander of the Grand Commandery and director of de Molay for Pennsylvania, and he can be contacted at the email address provided. Alright, of course, really interesting, and of course for the app subscribers, that issue of the Knight Templar magazine will be available for you to download via PDF. Next is a Midnight Freemason selection, which was a great piece. And it was written by Brother Bill Hosler, a past master and regular contributor to our site, as well as the Working Tools magazine. As usual, Bill Hosler is our resident Masonic fiction writer. You might know him from his amazing stories that he's created called The 50-Year Member, in which a young gentleman named Pudge befriends a 50-year member, and all kinds of great things ensue through the relationship these two gentlemen have. This selection is actually not a 50-year member piece. However, it is something that he submitted that was in the February 2014 issue of The Working Tools. And again, it's a bit of Masonic fiction, but I hope you enjoy it. I know I did. On Yonder Book by Brother Bill Hosler, Passmaster, Midnight Freemason Contributor. Elmer Herendine was sitting in the passenger seat of his daughter's car. He hated being driven around instead of just jumping in his car and driving himself. He had been driving for more than 80 years, and had seen no reason why he shouldn't continue. Several near misses and a couple of fender benders convinced his kids that he should no longer drive. He hated on relying on someone else to drive him to the places he needed to go, but he was thankful he was still living in his own home and not in a nursing home. As his daughter pulled into the lodge's parking lot, she told her dad, "Have a good time. Call me on my cell phone when you're ready to go home." She kissed Elmer on the cheek and gripped his hand. "See you in a little while," as he got out of the car and walked to the door of the temple. As he opened the door, he saw a group of men sitting around tables in the dining room. There were so many new faces. Many of the men in the room he had known for decades, but recently the lodge had been getting a lot of new members. Something had made the younger generation discover Masonry. It did his heart good to see young men knocking on the lodge's door. There were so many young men that the usual team of men teaching the memory work couldn't handle them all, so the master of the lodge asked Elmer to join the team and help these young men advance through the degrees. Elmer was happy to help. For many years he had been on the memory work team until he felt it was time to step aside and let the younger men take up the work, but since his wife died, he had been living alone in his house. It was a lonely life, although his kids would visit him and several members of the lodge would come to check on him, and lately drive him to his doctor's appointments. As he walked in the door, Elmer removed his overcoat and his fedora and hung them in the coat closet. The master of the lodge came and greeted him. "Hi, Elmer. I have your candidate over here for you. Elmer, I would like you to meet Zach Morrow. You are going to teach him the Entered Apprentice lecture." Elmer took Zach's hand and led him into the temple's library. Zach was the newest Entered Apprentice, just 19 years old. Zach was eager to learn. He couldn't wait to advance through the degrees. The two sat down at a beautifully crafted hardwood table. The old man opened his briefcase and removed the cipher book. The book had seen better days. The once beautifully tooled leather had become cracked and worn. The Grand Lodge seal embossed in gold on the front cover had lost its luster to the point the gold could barely be seen. Pages were yellowed and some pages torn, which had scotch tape holding them together. You could barely read the printing on the pages under the tape. The book's binding had given away and the pages were loosely contained within the two covers. The duct tape the old man had tried to fix the binding had stopped working a long time ago. "Wow," Zach said, "that book is ancient. You should get a new one. I'm sure the lodge has others you could use." The old man frowned. "I'll admit it has seen better days, but there is still a lot of life left in it." Zach laughed. "Are you kidding? The pages are just lying in there. It's not a book, it's just a folder of old pages." "Son, let me tell you a little story. When I was just a little older than you, I got this book when I was on leave from the army. I was raised as a master mason right after I got out of basic training before I was shipped out overseas. The men in the lodge rushed to get me raised in the short time that I had at home. As I was leaving to go back to the army, I placed this book in my back pocket and started to learn the symbols that make up the ciphers as I rode the train back to camp. I read it religiously on the troop ship that carried us all off to England. I found some waterproof material to wrap it in, and it carried in the breast pocket of my uniform as I waded the waters of Omaha Beach during the Normandy invasion. I recited parts of the ritual to myself as I waded in the waters, trying to distract me from the bullets zipping past my head and watching men die as I advanced on the beach. I think that is what kept me sane during that awful time. I felt like, by reciting it to myself, the grand architect of the universe was watching over me. That book comforted me, fighting all the way across Europe until the day we heard Germany surrendered. And with tears of joy, I read it on the troop ship all the way home. When the army recalled me to fight in Korea, the book went with me. We served my country once again. I even had it with me when I got to attend a lodge in Japan, when I was on leave. Back home, that book helped me learn the ritual when I was going through the chairs into the very east of this lodge, and it allowed me to help other men gain more light in masonry, just like today, as I teach to you. This book has been my friend, my companion, my inspiration for over 70 years. It has been in my back pocket through wars, weddings, the births of my children, good times and bad, through all of my travels. And when I put down my working tools and pass to the Celestial Lodge above, I have instructed that this old book will be placed in the pocket of my suit as they lower me into my final resting place so that I can continue to learn at the feet of the Master of the Grand Lodge above. You see, my brother, this book and I have a lot in common. At one time we were both new, and we have both traveled some. Neither of us are in a perfect condition. We both share a lot of wear from all of the years of use, but we are still in a pretty good shape for everything that we have been through. I feel like both of us are in a pretty good shape considering the shape we're in. The young man lowered his head in shame. Zack had tears in his eyes. I'm sorry, sir. I meant no disrespect. I can see why that little book means so much to you. It's your life between two covers. The old man smiled and placed his hand on the young man's shoulder. You are right, son. Masonry has been my life, and I learned a lot from it, and that little book. And I charge you to do the same thing. The teachings of Masonry will carry you through life's challenges if you apply them, and don't worry, I took no offense. That is why you are here, to learn to subdue your passions. As the old man opened the book and said, let's get your life in Masonry started. So again, if you like the Masonic fiction like that, Brother Bill Hosler is always bringing it to the table. A wonderful writer. Again, great stuff. If you like it, make sure you check out the Midnight Freemasons blog page and also the Working Tools magazine, which you can find more out about a subscription at twtmag.com. And subscriptions are available via print, electronic. They're in the newsstand on Apple devices as well, so check them out. And of course, the Midnight Freemasons is just a website. You can visit www.midnightfreemason.blogspot.com. And I wanted to remind everyone, but it is in the future a bit, the Ancient Accepted Scottish Rite Southern Jurisdiction is having their Celebrating the Craft event in May. I believe it's May 17th, which is a great program. It streams live and is a telethon to raise money to restore the House of the Temple. It's a very worthwhile endeavor, and I hope you can all contribute. And you can find out more on their website. And I'll try to have some links on the show notes to point you in the right directions. And speaking of support, if you would like to help support this show, please visit the website www.wcypodcast.com and click on the Support the Show links. There are several ways, ranging from our exclusive apps, which let you stream access the papers that we read, and even Masonic wallpapers for your mobile device each week are uploaded on the app so that you can download those at any time. You can do some shopping at onnit.com for some amazing healthy living tools and supplements like nootropic vitamins and kettlebells, all kinds of great stuff. And of course, if you use the promo code or coupon code WCY at checkout, you'll get 10% off. There is also freemasonryart.com, which sells the best Masonic aprons around, and that's because they're made by Brother for Brother. You can even have him do some custom artwork as well. They're made by Brother Juan Sepulveda of the Winding Stairs podcast, and of course, he also has some amazing Masonic prints. It's all great stuff. Again, if you decide to buy from either one of those guys, please use the promo code WCY at the checkout so that you are supporting this show, and the best part is that that code gets you 10% off as well. The most popular way of donating, of course, is through a straight PayPal donation. You pick the amount, and you can even do what a few brothers have done, which is just about floored me with the support. Brother Steve Harrison and Brother Leakum both did this, where they set up a monthly contribution to the program, and I can't thank you guys enough. It's just incredibly generous. And with support like that, this show can go on indefinitely, which is awesome. We can keep brothers entertained, educated. We can be there for the brothers out on the road who are listening, who can't always make it to Lodge. We can be there for the brothers who are at home and can't get a ride to Lodge. And perhaps equally as important is that this show is there for the Mason at heart who has not yet petitioned the Lodge, but has questions. And of course, we're there for you. So moving on, this week's famous Freemason is Phil Baker, born August 26th, 1896. And he passed away on November 30th, 1963. He was a popular American comedian and MC on the radio. Baker was also a vaudeville actor, composer, songwriter, accordionist, and author. He went to school in Boston, and his first stage appearance was in Boston, an amateur show. Baker began in vaudeville playing the piano for a violinist named Ed Janis, and he was 19 when he teamed up with Ben Burney for the vaudeville act, Burney and Baker. This originally was a serious musical act, with Baker on accordion and Burney on violin, but eventually ended up with comic elements. After breaking with Burney shortly after World War I, Baker partnered with Sid Silvers up until 1928. Baker went on to pursue a successful solo career. His solo act included him singing, playing the accordion, telling jokes, and being heckled by a planted audience member called JoJo. With this act, Baker played the Palace Theater in 1930 and 1931. In 1923, however, Baker appeared in an early DeForest phonofilm short, a musical monologue in which he played the accordion and sang. Burney also appeared in a DeForest phonofilm, Ben Burney and All the Lads, featuring Burney's band and pianist Oscar Levant. During World War I, Baker served in the U.S. Navy. He also appeared in a number of Broadway musicals, like Music Box Revue, Billy Rose's Crazy Quilt, Artists and Models, Greenwich Village Follies, A Night in Spain, Calling All Stars. Baker appeared with Carmen Miranda in the musical The Gang's All Here in 1943. Baker's likeness was drawn in a character by Alex Gard for the walls of Sardi's, the New York City Theater District restaurant. That picture is now part of the collection of the New York Public Library. On the radio, he started his own series, The Armored Jester, which was on NBC. In the 1940s, he appeared on Duffy's Tavern on February 22, 1944, and was the host of the popular quiz show, Take It or Leave It, which later changed its title to The $64 Question. Baker composed many songs, including Park Avenue Strut, Look at Those Eyes, Just Suppose, Antoinette, Strange Interlude, Humming a Love Song, Rainy Day Pal, Pretty Little Baby, Did You Mean It, My Heaven on Earth, Invitation to a Broken Heart. Baker passed away on December 1st, 1963 in Copenhagen, Denmark. He was married to Ingrid Erik, a Danish model with whom he had two children, Philip and Lisa. Ingrid Erik Baker died in December of 1997. That's it for this week. Please remember, as always, to find us on Facebook and follow on Twitter at Whence Came You. Share it with your friends, share it with anyone who might be interested in the craft. Please check out the Midnight Freemasons 3 times a week at www.midnightfreemason.blogspot.com. It is singular, Midnight Freemason. We are working on our .com. And again, amazing content. Also, if you like Masonic talk that doesn't stray from difficult subjects, please watch us live on Google Hangouts and YouTube on Tuesday nights at 10, 9 central. And if video isn't your thing, you can check out the podcast version as well, which is available on iTunes and other podcatchers like Stitcher Smart Radio very soon. So you can look for that. If you like this show, please give us a rating on iTunes. If you hate the show, please also rate the show. Let me know what we can do better. And you can email me direct at wcypodcast.com. I answer all emails personally and as soon as I can. So I'd love to hear from you guys, whether you have been a Mason for years or a day, even if you're not yet a brother and you have some questions. I hope I can help you out. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you all next week. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You? I'm Robert Johnson.